Henry VIII was a remarkable young man. He was kind. He was intelligent. He spoke, I think, 5 languages. He was very well educated in history and culture and literature and all that kind of stuff. Then he was jousting one day. He loved to joust. That was the way you showed your manhood in those days. And he had left the visor of his helmet up. I guess he could see better. And he kind of forgot. Maybe he had a little ADD. I don't know. People in the stands were screaming, "Henry, Henry, put down your visor." He failed to do so, and the lance of his opponent just pierced his skull and gave him a terrible, terrible head injury. And after that, his personality really began to deteriorate. You can read the whole story in Mary Lee.
With the tertiary syphilis that he had.
Oh. Yes, well, that came along.
He might have gotten that by impulsive behavior. So, onward, Christian soldiers. I used to sing that when I was a young boy being raised in a Lutheran church. I didn't understand what it was all about, but it has a nice kind of a marching rhythm to it. And, of course, the religion says, "Thou shalt not kill anybody from thy own culture." Right? The infidels, the other guys, it's okay. No. Now, cruelty has a way of propagating itself. Cruelty and sadism, as well as ADD, often accompany traumatic brain injury, TBI, and PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, only named, by the way, after the Vietnam War. They called it battle fatigue and shell shock and stuff like that before. The same is true for social abuse, reactive attachment disorder, or neglect. The nervous system itself is affected by self-inflicted abuse or neglect. Psychological cruelty or brainwashing, as when a neglectful parent tells a child that the reason things are so obviously wrong is the child herself is bad. You deserve this. That's psychological mind-bending. The consequences are guilt, the gift that keeps on giving, anxiety, or depression. Some estimate half our jail population have ADD, not to mention other psychiatric disorders, and the instances of PTSD and head injury are rampant. Those guys are fighting all the time. Some of them are very strong. They work out in those gyms, you know.
Yes.
I'm sorry, speak up.
Solitary confinement.
Absolutely. Solitary confinement on top of brain injury, on top of bad diet.
Solitary confinement. We're just repeating it over here.
I'm sure we'll have time to have questions at the end of this thing. So forcible conversion makes for rigid and fanatical believers. So think about, in the Middle East, poverty, malnutrition, emotional neglect, various types of social, physical, or sexual abuse, brainwashing, as the precondition for the brain of the true believer. Brain injury or deficit is a setup for fanatical conversion or monotheistic psychology, as is the desperate economic and social conditions or the desperate need to flee these.
Think about absent fathers in many countries constantly in war, including the Ulster counties of Ireland, the northern counties for years. You know.
And when you're desperate, any simple answer sounds good. If you only come to Jesus, he will take care of everything for you. So an abused, neglected brain. Look at this hemisphere here. Not like this one. And that's the neglected left. That's the left hemisphere that's atrophied, and the right hemisphere that's paranoid and fanatical and rather large. And you can see this when you do what's called a power spectrum of a brain. All the power is in the delta and theta, and this is the alpha, and then there's almost no power in the higher order thinking areas. Recipe for the Shaheed martyr: violence, malnutrition, economic deprivation, and the relentless desert sun. You got it all there. Abram Hoffer says the fanatic is convinced that the cause he holds on to is a rock of ages. A happy procession in Sri Lanka. Sort of reminds you of the Boston Marathon a little bit.
Yeah.
And a suicide bomber arriving by bike, an unexpected guest. The drumbeat pauses. The shockwave arrives before the conscious mind registers it. Sri Lanka is a very usually kind of peaceful place. And the aftermath.
And a lot of head injuries among the living, the shockwave.
Now, in the 7th, 8th century, along came Islam in the Middle East. And as Karen Armstrong shows you really clearly, the Arabic people didn't have a religion or much of a culture of their own. They were just warring desert tribes out there. And the idea that you could be obedient to the will of one supreme God just went like wildfire. Muhammad was believed to be taken to heaven on a mare with a human face from the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, and why that is contended over by both Christians and Islamics. The 1.5 billion Islamic people worldwide, Muhammad died in 632 Christian era. Not a generation passed before bloodshed and the religion divided into two parts called the Shiites and the Sunni. And people think, well, the Shiites are really kind of conservative and more fanatical. The Sunni are kind of nice, liberal Islamic people, with some exceptions. Osama bin Laden was a Wahhab Sunni. And Wahhab is really fanatical. He was a violent, murderous desert sheikh who just got his people together and then decided to form a religion that was intolerant of almost everything. He affiliated with the wealthy and powerful House of Saud, and he forbade grave worship and instituted Sharia. And Osama bin Laden became a follower of Abu Qutb in mid-20th century. And Qutb had been to America. He didn't get along with anybody very well. He looked kind of funny. He talked kind of funny. He couldn't get a girlfriend, and everybody else had a girlfriend. And he saw rampant sex and college campus drunkenness, and he said, America's an evil empire. That sound familiar, by the way? Who was it said something was an evil empire? George Bush declared what?
Russia.
Russia and...
Oh, it was Reagan.
Reagan. I'm sorry,
yeah,
it was Reagan.
Evil
okay.
Empire, right.
All right, so revival meetings in America around 1840 was the big deal. And when you look at American religions, you're going to see what was going on there. The Millerite religion, William Miller, used an obscure mathematic to calculate the rapture. Now, what is the rapture? In the rapture, all the designated faithful, I think there are a couple hundred thousand of them, 188,000, how many? 144,000. I see we have a scholar of the rapture in the audience here. There are all kinds of practical jokes that were played on fundamentalist rapture-believing people, like a girl went into the bathroom and everybody quickly dropped their clothes and left them all lying around, because you're supposed to be naked when you're taken up into the arms of Jesus in the upper airs, and said, oh, Karen, look what happened. Look, they've all been taken up to heaven. She bursts into tears. They left me. Well, William Miller convinced his friends and neighbors that the rapture was at hand. This is a big part of apocalyptic religion in America. And they all put on white robes, and they neglected their farms. Imagine what would happen if the farmers around here neglected their farms. They didn't bother to put away food anymore. They weren't particularly economically prudent anymore. Excuse me. And they stood up on, it was supposed to happen, I think, October, November, something like that. They stood up waiting, praising God, waiting for the coming that William Miller had prophesied. And as Joseph Campbell used to say, the second coming of Christ, well, been waiting for a long time. It's the great non-event. I don't think he'd like what he saw when he came back anyway. And Miller said, ah, darn, I made a mistake. It's 1844.
They had a hard winter fall that year.
They did the same thing. They stood on the mountaintops. And such a spirit of weeping came over us that we wept until the day's dawn. They were so eager to be among the elect. Their neighbors, on the other hand, who never considered themselves among the elect, the 144,000, thank you for that. We're kind of pissed off. And they said, Holy Chariot didn't come for you, fellers, eh? You know, you were going to leave the rest of us here in perdition while you were taken up with the Lord? Well, too bad. Sorry it didn't happen. So, as Anthony Trollope, who visited America, said, Americans make up religion anew for themselves. The Adventists, the Millerites, the Church of Christ, what did I put in the Church
of the
Subgenius? Endeavor Academy, Ethical Culture, Jehovah's Witnesses. These are all. My dad had a booth for the Swedenborgian Church at the World's Fair in 1964. And right next to this very decorous intellectual Swedenborg booth was a booth with incredible sound effects, thunder and lightning, and people falling to their knees. It was the Jehovah's Witness booth. And they got a lot more people visiting that booth than the Swedenborg booth for some reason.
The Mormons had a great one too, actually.
The Mormons, Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints, they're waiting for that thing to happen. There's some newer ones, People's Temple, Heaven's Gate, the Branch Davidians, Scientology, the New Thought Movement. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff, and they all are waiting, including, it really puzzles me why the Seventh-day Adventists are so healthy if they're going to be seized up in the rapture. Why would you want to have such a healthy body? Franklin Graham, Billy Graham actually mellowed with age a little bit, but Franklin says, every knee that is under the earth hill will bow to him one day and confess him Lord. And the conflict between the Muslims and the Jews, Franklin says there's an easy solution for that. They should both convert to Christianity, particularly the kind that I preach. John Darby Nelson was really a mischief maker. He was an Englishman, founder of dispensationalism, the core belief of the Plymouth Brethren, an itinerant revivalist preacher who crossed America several times preaching the rapture. Look at his eyes, my friends. There's a man who can hypnotize you. And the Schofield Bible, Cyrus Schofield. I remember my dad talking about the Schofield Bible. He didn't hold it very dear, but it was on many, many shelves. If you didn't get a Gideon Bible, you could get a Schofield Bible. And the annotations attempted to show how biblical the events of the modern world are and how they were fulfillments of the historical prophecy. He was a Tennessee attorney who abandoned his wife and child. He was accused of embezzling funds from a senator for whom he worked. And he was converted by James Brooks, a Darbyite, in prison. And this is the man, Cyrus Schofield, who reinterpreted the Bible.